Hello and welcome to another edition of the Legal Geeks podcast. We are here today to discuss the latest entry into the Marvel Universe, the first post-Avengers Endgame movie. But before we do that, Josh has a little information about a special sponsor for our podcast tonight.
Thank you, Jessica. This episode of the Legal Geeks is brought to you by the new self-published book, Unlock Stories. You find a phone on a counter, or left on a city bus, or abandoned in a gutter. What do? Try to find the owner, sell it online, see if it holds any secrets. The last thing you should do is launch a strange app. These are Unlock Stories, where a mysterious phone is found and lost and found again, gravitating from person to person, tempting them, compelling them, and changing their lives forever. The stories turn from suspenseful to absurd, heartfelt to noir, horrifying to redemptive. Once you find the phone, you never know what you will unlock. My story is The Veil, about an app that allows you to exchange text messages with the dead. I had a ton of fun writing this because I was able to honor my hometown of Sunnyvale, California, explore legal issues of what would you do if you could find out there is life beyond death and how that could change the legal system, and a lot of fun nerding out at an obscure science fiction convention. Unlock Stories is available on Amazon paperback, Kindle, and Apple Books. Visit unlockstories.com for more and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Gray Star Phone.
All right. So, Josh, how are you?
I'm great. You know, life's been good. Recovered from Comic-Con, and we'll talk more about that on another recording. And just been doing lots of document review. The weather is nice. Life's good.
All right. Summertime in California. I think they made some songs about how good life is there in the summer.
Yeah. They're true. So
it's all true.
Sorry.
My summer, yeah. Summer in Wisconsin this year has not been quite so fun. It's been all up and down, and it feels like Florida half the time, which is annoying because I do not like summertime in Florida. But that is okay because it has given me good excuses to try to sneak in some movies when the weather's either been too hot and muggy or too rainy. And I just went to one last week, actually courtesy of my daughter. She'd already seen this movie once and insisted that I go back with her as quickly as possible. And that was Spider-Man: Far From Home. We went to see it on a hot Friday afternoon here. There was actually like a massive fire and power outage downtown Madison that was even trending nationwide on Twitter. So it was a perfect chance to sneak out of work a little bit early and go check what really was a fantastic addition to the Marvel Universe. What did you think of it, Josh?
Spider-Man Far From Home is pure joy. It's why we go to the movies. It's why we read comic books. It's why the character of Spider-Man's been so endearing, created by Steve Ditko and Stan Lee, and then the debate with how much did Kirby draw. But that's not important right now. The movie is an absolute wonderful delight. It's a love letter to fans. It's a love letter to the other, 21 Marvel movies. And you just want to go out and hug somebody afterwards. It is so much fun.
It is a ton of fun. That is a good point. I Spider-Man as a character that I like, but I even like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. I skipped over the whole Andrew Garfield period, but I have to say Spider-Man, especially in the hands of Tom Holland, is an absolute delight. Just like pure joy, but also still dealing with like the teenage angst of, you know, having these powers really kind of sucks sometimes when you'd like to go have like a bit of a teenage social life.
Yeah, that would blow. And raises immediate legal issues with Nick Fury, and we're not sure if S.H.I.E.L.D.'s even been officially recreated yet, so if there's even a legal mandate for them to exist. And he's trying to recruit a minor to go out and play superhero, which is like, does that make Spider-Man a child soldier? Like, what's going on here, and why is Fury being such a jerk, more so than an other appearances, and the final post-credit scene explained why.
I say, spoiler alert, people. We have to talk about all this stuff. So go ahead and talk about, yeah. We should say you can't see it on a podcast, but Nick Fury is in air quotes.
Yeah. So, and I have some, look forward to talking about that at the end.
Okay.
But it's like, those are some serious issues. With, you know, on the flip side, I mean, I adore this version of Aunt May. And
oh, yeah. Really, Marissa Tomei, baby. She's awesome.
I think every Aunt May I see is my favorite, but, you know, she just nails it so good with, you know, you can dodge bullets, but not a banana, and packing his suit with the little note. It's like, I love her. I enjoy her on Instagram, so it's so good.
I don't follow her on Instagram. I've got to follow her.
She does little videos. She's a delight. It's more, please. We just need more of that. But
I do say I can do a 7 degrees of superheroes, even crossing Marvel to DC with her, of course, because I first fell in love with Marissa Tomei when she played a plucky young woman from Minnesota on A Different World, which, of course, was the defining TV show for my, like, junior high years, because it starred the amazing Lisa Bonet. The amazing Lisa Bonet, who is currently with, partnered up with Jason Momoa, who, of course, is Aquaman, which is actually, ironically, the movie my daughter, both my kids, are watching tonight. But anyway, yeah, sorry, I just had to go off that rant, because I've just loved Marissa Tomei for decades, so I'm glad to see her still doing all these awesome things.
Rightfully so. If she needs representation, call us. Like, we would love to hang out.
Yes, I do want to say, though, getting back to the Nick Fury thing for a second, that is a good point. I mean, there's two layers there. One, is this like a child soldier thing? But even that, I mean, absent a draft, the government is not supposed to be able to co-opt anyone, adult or child. But actually, so far, the draft has always been, you know, men over the age of 18. But it hasn't been able to just take anyone. I mean, I'm sure, I did not look into this, I'm sure Tom Harper, a resident military law expert, could probably talk about this, about the requirements that have to be put in place before you can even, like, draft somebody. But yeah, this was wrong on multiple layers.
Yeah, agreed. Now, the pro argument for it would be Aunt May has approved of him being in the Avengers. Fury needed an Avenger. Spider-Man's the available Avenger that he can look up. So that might be parental permission, you know, for being able to serve. But even then, it seems to go against the Sokovia Accords, which, according to some secondary sources, have been either ignored or repealed post-Thanos snap of like, whoa, we're throwing that out, we're done. Because enough of the Marvel shows seem to be ignoring it, like all the TV shows. Because all the, you know, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Daredevil, Iron Fist, all of them should have been arrested or forced to sign the Accords, but they just ignored that on Netflix, and we shouldn't think too hard about that. That being said, maybe if S.H.I.E.L.D. was somehow legitimate again, Fury would have approval to go out and ask someone who's with the Accords for permission, but then the Aunt May connection is still tenuous because he's not going to the parental guardian for help. So there's some
especially
issues there.
Here, right? Where, I mean, Nick Fury basically misled Aunt May, Spider-Man, and the entire school trip as to what they were doing and where they were going, you know, and basically taking these people on this jaunt across Europe. Nothing that any of the parents of you said, hey, can we take your children to these places where incredibly dangerous things are going to go on? Obviously, none of the parents would have said, sure, no problem. So there's also not just Spider-Man, of course, but parental consent issues with everything that Nick Fury was doing to orchestrate Spider-Man being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it's basically, well, the children's lives were endangered anyway, whether or not they were helping, Spider-Man was involved or not. So we're just going to call that a mulligan. It's like, you don't get to make that call.
No.
And you guys clearly did not evaluate the threat from Mysterio and the Elementals as clearly as you should have.
Right.
You guys bought that hook, line, and sinker, which, again, was one of the themes of the movie. But it's like, dude, vet, do background checks. The world's greatest spy should be a little smarter than that.
Yes, which of course, because of course the reveal later on that it's not really Nick Fury does make me wonder if the actual Nick Fury would have been able to identify the issues with Mysterio from the beginning. One would hope so. Nick Fury himself presumably would say that of course he could have, because it does seem rather convenient that this problem shows up right when this guy shows up and there's really no questioning. Although I guess once you have the multiverse, like sure, people can pop in and out. And then, of course, you can't background check them.
Yeah, it's only like half of society died and then came back. So yes. Maybe the threshold is much lower now of like, dude, we've been through a lot. And when when a glowing dude shows up and says something's going on, okay. It's like we've learned what happens if we don't believe that. So everybody cowboy up.
Yes, and I want to get into that, but before we do, going back to Thanos' snap, I am glad, and this may be the only time the Marvel Universe really deals with this, but they did kind of take this opportunity to be like, all right, here's what happened. Like, people came back 5 years later, and in some ways dealing with it in the high school context makes even more sense, right? I mean, there's still issues as an adult, but if I come back, you know, and I've lost 5 years in my 40s, that's not as significant as, you know, classmates that you were going into eighth grade with, and all of a sudden you disappear and come back, and now they're, I guess, in college, if I'm doing the math right. So I think actually in some ways dealing with that in the high school kind of concept was a very nice place to deal with that. But they didn't get into, and I would have loved a whole discussion of how do you deal with the legal rights. Like, there's Marissa Tomei basically briefly mentioning that she basically reappeared in what was her old apartment and now other people are there. You know, and there's a whole stuff of, I mean, renting versus owning. And obviously there have been things with wars and strife where people have had to leave their homes against their will, basically. And, you know, the question about when the war is over, do they get to come back and reclaim things? So they kind of briefly touch on a little bit of that. Aunt May seems to be running some sort of support group to help people who have lost homes or other things because they've been snapped out of existence. But that would be a thing, like the nerd of me would love to have a whole little legal show just about dealing with that and having to create a whole new area of law for this.
And we can take a deeper dive into that because so there was the high school kids. And it's not like they disappeared in April and came back in April. They came back at different times of the year, so they had to repeat 8 months of a school year. So I could understand kids being a little ticked off about that.
Yes, complaining about having to redo midterms is a very funny little point.
But there were other issues, like one of the teachers talked about his wife faked being blinked to get out of the marriage, and she married another dude. Well, her second marriage would be void. Because she didn't blink, and she was still married without a divorce. So she literally committed, you know, bigamy, which would knock out the second marriage because the first marriage hadn't ended yet. So that was, I mean,
true, but what about people who really did blink? Like, would that be, is this a castaway situation? Like, if they get remarried, like if my spouse had blinked away and I got remarried in that 5 years and then my spouse blinks back, is that bigamy? And what do you do? Then it's the whole castaway Helen Hunt, Tom Hanks situation.
Yeah, that is a mess because there would have to be special legislation. You know, on one level, you could argue that, well, you were dead, so that did terminate our marriage. So that way we're not voiding out the second marriages. However, there would have to be state laws rapidly enacted to give people either like an annulment procedure. It's like, hey, the love of my life is back. We're done. which again would suck. Or on the flip side, it's like, hey, I know like literally no time's passed for you, but I've changed in 5 years after all of society came to a crashing halt. So there's a dissolution of marriage that could take place and there would have to be procedures for that. That would start unwinding probate, which again would get complicated.
Well, and the property, I mean, the asset. Yeah. And what do you do about assets, life insurance payments, assuming those were paid out? I mean, there have been issues with, you know, life insurance mistakenly being paid out. But in this situation, I don't know. I guess that is one of the biggest classifications. Did the legal system consider all these people who'd been blinked out? I guess they probably did consider them dead at that time, right? So,
unless it broke the
legal status.
Unless it broke the legal system, because looking at Endgame, New York looks abandoned. So if somebody was in Aunt May's apartment, there are probably plenty of empty ones. So, and, you know, go to San Francisco, you know, with Scott Lang running around. Now, granted, being from the Bay Area, I always bite my lip with like, oh, so the memorials in the Marin Headlands, looking back at the city, why do they cross the Golden Gate Bridge? That doesn't make sense. Did he go through Richmond? Why? Was Cassie's house that looked more like Alameda? I mean, it could have been part of San Francisco, depending. I mean, there are neighborhoods in San Francisco that can look like that. But like, Cassie Street looked completely abandoned with abandoned cars, piled up garbage, and empty houses. Yeah. So some folks could just come back and it's like, what the hell happened? Like, you know, and everything's just like derelict.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, well, let's just clean this up. And now we're going to deal with something like a massive FEMA type bailout after a national disaster for people to put lives back together. But the fact that Far From Home at least touches on this in a meaningful way made me happy, and I could go hug a screenwriter because they didn't ignore like the legal and real life ramifications of half a society coming back.
And I assume they knew they had to deal with that. I would be surprised if they dealt with it in any other films going forward. They're kind of like, all right. I mean, there may be passing references to it, but this was like, here, we've dealt with it. Yes, of course, it'd be very disruptive. It would be hard for everybody. We've dealt with that. Now move on. Because, of course, the flip side of that, I will say, is given how bleak everything looked in Avengers Endgame after the blip, I will say then in Spider-Man Far From Home, everything seemed pretty peachy and back to very normal again, whereas I would have expected more of that continuing breakdown. So that was the one thing that they're kind of like, oh, look at everything was horrible after the snap. But now they're like, okay, but now we're just going to go back to our normal, like everything's kind of awesome and we can go around and all the cities look back to normal. You know, I mean, they're doing a school trip across Europe and there's really no sign of the chaos that presumably was unleashed by losing half the population.
Agreed. At least they do say, was it 8 months had passed? So that could be enough time for things to start looking back to normal. But it also matters how proportional was the decimation. Because was it across the board? Because you literally could have had shifts in global power of like, oh, we lost two people in Germany. And like England's empty. You know, so there's...
Yeah.
You know, like they don't get into that because it wasn't like every city was 50% less. New York looked empty.
Yeah.
You know, the lights are off and they are, you know, it's dark. So anyway, that was a big rabbit hole and it does raise.
But that was fun and I'm glad they at least addressed it a little bit.
Well, that and, you know, the kid trying to get an alcoholic beverage on the flight. It's like, he's really 16. He blinked. We'll take that back now. It's like IDing people would get so weird so fast. And they would need to come up with legislation for people who, it's like you theoretically you're like 22 now.
Yeah.
But mathematically you would, but you lost 5 years. Like how do you, for those who got blinked, do they get like a dot on their driver's license? Like just because it doesn't, you know, you were still born in year X.
Right.
And it's just you had a 5 year gap where, you know, you were just gone.
Wow. That's just freaky, that alone. Oh.
Ah, good times.
Yes.
Well, let's jump into some of the legal issues. Not that we haven't been, but
like Mysterio specifically and the Elementals, you had a thought just kind of about that issue generally, right?
Yeah, and then you grabbed another one that's brilliant. So I look at Mysterio as, you know, the ultimate fraudster. Mm-hmm. And fraud, for those who have heard the word, but you might not be sure what the word actually means in the legal context, means it's the intentional misrepresentation, deceit, or concealment of a material fact with the intention of depriving an individual of property or the legal right or otherwise to cause some injury. Okay, that's, we hit that. And, you know, to prove it, you know, we could look at jury instructions because, you know, I'm funny and that's what I like to do. How would I prove this to a jury? It's the lawyer in me. This is how I think of, you know, a representation's made to the public or a third person. Mysterio comes flying in to fight an elemental with you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. agents shooting guns at, you know, a giant sand monster person. The representation was untrue. Yeah, it's a big special effect. The representation was material to a plaintiff's decision to act in a certain way. Well, Peter does give up Edith, and we have all the S.H.I.E.L.D. folks running around doing things that they shouldn't be doing to support Mysterio. Defendant clearly knew this was false, and so did all of his conspirators, which we can just tack that on. The defendant made the representation with the intention that it be repeated, or with reason to expect that it would be repeated to the plaintiff, and that it would be relied on by the plaintiff. Well, yeah, both S.H.I.E.L.D. and Peter fall into that trap. Mm-hmm. The representation was repeated. Look at all the little fights that Mysterio orchestrated with the water elemental attack and then the fire. Yes. And there was injury. Okay, and because the plaintiff was justified in relying on the representation. Well, yeah. Peter is clearly getting exploited because he, you know, lost his third father figure. And, you know, that has to take a little toll on somebody. And, you know, damages, you know, nearly wiping out London and global domination, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. We have all the elements of fraud. Now you took this in a slightly different way. And I love it, you know, I just love it.
Thank you. Well, it just made me think of, in a way, what he was trying to do. And there's ultimately a con here that he was pulling. But in a way, he was trying to create this false public emergency to then come in and act as a hero. And I did not have time to look this up to see if this, I'm sure this has happened before. I think I recall this. But generally, I was like, this is in some ways a much bigger version of falsely pulling a fire alarm, right? You are claiming there's a public emergency. You are causing people to, of course, like try to run out to avoid the emergency, the fire or whatever, which can lead to injuries. You're also, of course, causing massive expense and possible injury by the first responders, the people who are going to try to come respond because there's an emergency. So if this were in California, and if we could magnify this, California Penal Code 148.4 makes false fire alarms against the law. Now, I will say it can be a misdemeanor or felony. You're only guilty if you commit the act willfully and maliciously. So if you accidentally pull a fire alarm or pull it thinking that there's a fire and you're mistaken, you won't get in trouble. You are only getting in trouble if you knew that the fire alarm was false when you pulled it or if you acted recklessly. And then, you know, generally it's going to be a misdemeanor if you're just doing something small, unless someone suffered death or great bodily injury. In this case, I can't recall actually if anybody actually got severely injured, but certainly they did. There must have been with the whole London one, at least. There was a lot of stuff going on. So I'm sure that they would find that one, if not the water one as well, a felony. So that was just kind of my thought, was that this is on a big scale, like pulling a fire alarm to then tell everyone that you're the hero, you're coming in to rescue the day. And the other thing actually I was thinking of as you were talking about this and how this is all a fraud, it's kind of interesting that Marvel chose to do this year, where basically the villain is a con man, given that, you know, there have been about 200 think pieces this year about how it's the year of the con artist, right? I mean, there's the Fire Festival guy, there are all the stories and the trials of these people, I think primarily young women who are conning rich people, just over and over. They're like, you know, 2019 is the year of the con artist. And so it is sort of Marvel, once again, just their, you know, their fingers on the heartbeat of America. Just figure out, you know what? This is a time to have a villain who, at his basic level, is basically a con artist.
And a sly one. You know, the well-dressed. He's not a used car salesman or a failed real estate developer or a guy who's, like, bankrupted casinos. You know, it's much more than that. Because he's smart and he has a team working with him to pull off this crime. So that's one of the other big differences. And there's no orange in his costumes. Like, that's another thing that's worth acknowledging as well.
Wait, there's no what?
Orange. And
I don't know what that means.
You know, like somebody who'd be painted orange in orange face.
Oh. I can't believe I missed that one. All right, thank you. Good one.
It's kind of a green, and it's flowing, and it's a bubbly.
Bubble is weird.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, again, God bless Steve Ditko. And now, granted, I'm pretty sure Ditko helped create Mysterio just because of the look. I mean, that. But that's something to double check. I don't remember all the credits on who created Mysterio. But I love the fire alarm analogy. And, you know, good call. Good call.
Thank you. Thank you.
The one of the other things that's big is there's destruction of property. And,
yes.
And destruction of another person's property is a conversion. And I'm forgetting if this movie began in New Mexico, but it would look like the American Southwest. And or maybe even Mexico itself. I don't remember. I didn't write that down. I'm sorry. But, you know, where we have the rapid intro of Mysterio, it's like, you know, their thing's getting blown up. And, you know, the, you know, camouflage drones flying around are blowing stuff up. So there is destruction of private property. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's just a jerk thing to do. And it's just not cool. It's not cool.
See, now being a civil litigator, the other thing that really stuck out to me, and again, I've only seen it the once and was with my daughter, so I didn't have good notes of this. Well, any notes. I'm not good like taking notes like you are. But anyway, but they were discussing basically these were all former Stark Industry employees who are basically taking technology that they had developed at Stark Industries and using it here. So of course, to me, I'm like, all right, well, there's all kinds of like patent violation, probably issues, theft of trade secret, possible issues. I'm sure Stark Industries had them all signing confidentiality provision. So there's probably violations of that by using this information, you know. So unfortunately, like the way it usually works in America, work for hire is, as comic book artists know, and also as scientists who work for large corporations know, generally the stuff you're developing on the corporate dime is not your property that you get to take with you. That actually belongs to the company that has hired you. You may be an inventor on the patent, but you don't actually own the rights to it. So anyway, so that was one of my thoughts too, is I'm like, you know, Pepper Potts could also then go after all the conspirators at this point, the co-conspirators at least, and have some massive civil litigation against them that would be quite unpleasant if they aren't going to jail, prison.
I would do both, but I'm old fashioned that way, you know, and there's some interesting questions of like, how exactly is, you know, Stark Industries being run now? Is it all Pepper? You know, like, does Peter have an ownership interest due to Edith? You know, that would be fun to dig into a little bit more, or yeah. leave it vague so the writers aren't going to be bound by anything for future movies. There's that as well.
That's right.
Because, you know, comics, you know, they've had Pepper in charge of Stark Industries, especially, well. I don't want to take too much of a giant deep dive into all the comic history, but yes, that would be cool.
Yeah. So anyway, so that'd be kind of interesting. So yes, as civil litigator, I'm like, I would take on that case. That would be pretty awesome. Although, of course, at the end of the day, I'm sure, you know, you wouldn't recover any damages. Even if you got some massive damages award from them, you wouldn't be able to actually recover on that. But that was still. That is still a possible legal issue that could hound those people, which is why you do not agree to go into conspiracy with a psychopath and threaten, you know, pretend global destruction.
Yeah, that it's one thing to be upset at your former employer.
Which I hear that. I've been there.
But on the flip side, when your former employer literally saved, like, the world and
yeah.
all of existence. You might let some things slide.
True.
It's like, wow, everyone would still be dead if it wasn't for him. Like, you might you might call some things a mulligan. It's like, you know what? He ultimately was right. So, yeah, I'm a little embittered, but it's not worth it. It's just not worth going there. Unless you're just, I mean, like, I've been just angry for, you know, 15 years. Like, that's bad. And, like, and if any of those folks got blinked, it's like, I mean, it's like, okay, so a decade, and then you came back, and now, you know, like, so you come back, Stark dies saving life. Like, that's the big thing. Saved life across the universe. And you're still
sacrificed his.
Yeah. And you're upset at him. It's like, he knew the snap would kill him. Mm-hmm. It seriously injured the Hulk. So he knew exactly what would happen. And he went out the hero. And now you want to be a dick. That takes cojones on a massive level. To go like, yeah, I want to help desecrate his memory and undo what he did. It's like, really? Really? That's your game plan? Okay, you deserve to get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
Whether it's in court or from a superhero smacking you around, I'm open to either. I prefer legal, just for the record.
Yes, that's right.
Unless they're doing wrong, then have at them. So there are a couple other things on that, and some of the stuff will tie into the post-credit scene. Is, you know, you touched on the change of travel, and that's a big one. There's lots of child endangerment, and we kind of touched on that already with the child soldier issue. But there might be a negligent entrustment of Edith to Peter.
Yeah.
It's like giving a kid a car when they're not ready for it, or they don't have a driver's license. I mean, Peter generally does have a good head on his shoulders, but he did get manipulated.
Yeah. He is still too young and trusting and has other priorities.
Yeah. And I mean, like, he did go through a lot. You know, I mean, when you know, like, they haven't jumped into this too much, but, you know, Peter's dad and mom died.
Yeah.
Then Uncle Ben, and, like, they've only just hinted at that because they don't want to redo the origin story for a third time.
Right.
Okay, but Uncle Ben, too. So that's two dads. And then, you know, Tony.
Yeah.
And Tony's death, like, he was there, front row, sobbing, you know, with his father figure, you know, dying.
Yeah.
Saving the world. So, like, all of that would weigh on him, which then goes to the issue of Nick Fury and company really not mentoring him in a meaningful way and just laying it on him with, like, oh, yeah, you have all these killer satellites at your control.
Yeah.
And not really a user's manual. And I'm not going to give you any advice and just kind of be a dick. What the hell, Nick? What the hell? Like, just how does that help a 16-year-old understand what they need to be doing?
Well, again, let's get into that, though, because we have to go to the fact that it turns out that's not actually Nick Fury, right? It's actually the Skrull from Captain Marvel, played by Ben Mendelsohn, right?
Talos, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and his wife. And,
right.
And here's, I do love Talos.
Yes.
I was thinking, why is Fury being such a dick?
Yeah.
Did you sense that too? That Fury was okay.
I mean, like, the whole thing in the hotel room and people are interrupting. I mean, yes, you know, Sam Jackson is, like, angry, impatient actor. It's always fun to watch, right? But yeah, the instincts of Nick Fury in this one were so off. Now, that being said, I'm still not good enough to make that connection until the end. But once you saw that, you're like, okay, that explains why Nick Fury was really kind of, aside from the moment with, Maria Hill, when she went up and got ready to, like, that part was cool. When she knew that Mysterio would, like, reveal himself. That was a Nick Fury that I know and love, right? The one who's always on top of it, always three steps ahead of everyone. But yeah, the rest of the time, this was not that Nick Fury. So I'm assuming this leads to some other movie. The reason that Nick Fury himself is actually out in space and having Talos cover for him. It does also explain why Nick Fury was not as impressive in this movie as he usually is.
And I'm glad they set it up so fans wouldn't just go like, what's wrong with Nick? And go like, that's because it's not Nick. So a couple nerd reactions to Fury being in space.
Okay.
So in the comics, they have S.W.O.R.D., which is a, you know, this space division of S.H.I.E.L.D. They have a satellite or big space station in orbit, and that's to protect the Earth. And in the comics, you know, they've had Captain Marvel being based there with Alpha Flight to help protect the planet.
Okay.
There's another way that they could go, or maybe merge in a few things. There was a wonderful series a few years back called Original Sin. And that's where Thor became unworthy.
Right.
And, well,
because Nick was on the moon and whispered something to him, right?
Yeah, and because Nick, for apparently like five decades, had been the man on the wall, and he'd been using LMDs to like be him on Earth while he was on the space station, taking out threats before they became true threats. So, okay. I mean, if you're into this, you know, like spy going like, hey, that guy's a problem, well, let's go take care of it. Like very, like, you know, the aggressive, proactive, spycraft type, type thing, which is why it was called Original Sin. And Fury had just been bumping off bad guys before they, you know, really threatened Earth. And ultimately, after what happens to that, the Winter Soldier takes Fury's spot doing that. Instead of LMDs, you could have Skrulls playing Nick.
Yeah.
And so I don't know which direction they might go, because again, this was the end credit scene where, like, you know, Jaws go slack with like, so that makes more sense now. Maybe they're going to do a little of both. Maybe it's just S.W.O.R.D. I don't know. I couldn't tell what they were building because everything happened so fast, but it was a total nerdgasm of like, oh, they did it. They actually did it. And that was a nice 1-2 punch. So I really appreciated that. But
yeah, see, that was not as significant to me, the whole like that he was in outer space part. It was just that oh my God, that wasn't really Nick Fury. That was all I got from it. So that is good to know all of that.
Yeah, and if you I highly recommend Original Sin if you want to pick up one of the trades.
All right.
A bunch of the spin-off trades, you know, like there's a great Hulk Iron Man one that's really, really good. But you could get the trade of just the main story.
Yeah.
And that's exceptional because it wasn't like, it's the end of the world and we have to stop it. It was a completely different story that
nice.
And that's also one of the things I liked about Far From Home. Now you run into a bad guy deficit. Like, you know, every bad guy can't just be, like, trying to blow up the world.
Right.
I'm either going to enslave everyone or blow it up.
Right.
And Mysterio was, like, revenge world domination, but it was a revenge story. Mm-hmm. You know, a little different than Civil War, which was, you know, Zemo wanting revenge on the Avengers and, you know, breaking them up.
Right.
So I really appreciate the fact that they could figure out motivation for a bad guy that's just a little different than what we've seen before, and not just have it be, yeah, we're going to blow up the world and you got to stop me.
Right. Well, and again, the fact that I had actually forgotten, I'd even seen it during the promos and that Jake Gyllenhaal, and then I kind of completely forgot about going into the movie. And then there's this Jake Gyllenhaal, who is an amazing actor and was so good and so likable. So even though I'm like, he's probably got to be the villain, it's still a little bit of a shock because he was so good there. And obviously the multiverse is something that, you know, I think we're all becoming accustomed to, like, oh yeah, sure. The multiverse, like it could just be one over and here you go. So the fact that they keep getting these quality people for these roles is exciting too.
That and he was so good and he seems like a nice guy because,
yes.
You know, Holland and he like went to children's hospitals together, visiting sick kids, and just like, it's like, God bless you guys. Like, that's just nice. And then the fact that Holland can actually do a flip, you know, and it's just, yeah, if you haven't seen the hospital foot, you know, like hospital visitation footage that they did, it's pretty sweet.
Ooh, and, I'd heard about that. I had not seen it. I will have to watch that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, Marvel, Disney, they've done a really good job of hiring people to play these characters who love the characters, who are into it. You know, at California Adventure, you know, they'll have, you know, Spider-Man there.
Yeah.
And, well, one day Holland went and played Spider-Man, and then at the end, took off his mask and everyone lost it. So he does stuff like that. And it's just like, rock on, dude. You know, like, you're a good human being.
I was reading this recap of an interview the Russo brothers had done with someone recently. I don't know if it was tied to Comic-Con or something else. And they talked about a few things. And the part about Tom Holland that did crack me up is they said they were asked, you know, who was most likely to spoil the Marvel movies. And they did say it was a toss-up between Mark Ruffalo, who is adorable as the Hulk, or Tom Holland as the two actors who were most likely to spoil the Marvel movies. That was always really cute that they often had to go out for the Marvel press, like with a chaperone, because they did get in trouble for revealing too many secrets.
Oops. And he's made jokes about that as well. So
yes, he is aware.
He's aware. So that probably means he's going to be more careful. Mm-hmm. And so I would hope so. And, but yeah, they're lots of fun there, which brings us to the mid-credit scene of, we get J. Jonah Jameson back, and this one is kind of like running InfoWars for the Daily Bugle. And
yes. Oh, that's right. Oh my God. I totally forgot. And that was a huge mind-blowing moment. That's right.
So here, a bunch of legal issues. I mean, this one's just a giant pinata. First off, I want to blame S.H.I.E.L.D. and a little towards Stark Industries. Now, the fact S.H.I.E.L.D. helped build up Mysterio as a hero, mm-hmm. and then when he turns out to have been a bad guy all along and doing a fraud, that needs to be communicated immediately. Because you can't have somebody be set up as a hero who played you and then let it be. Like, that is...
Right, and he dies, and then you don't say anything. Yeah.
Big boo-boo. And they needed to come out swinging with, if it hadn't been for the bravery of Spider-Man, millions would have, you know, like, that's the way it needed to be, as opposed to letting the fraudster continue.
Yeah.
And raising the issue of, like, did he survive? Or is that just the guy in the chair who, like, left with all the video and other data to kind of do a deep fake?
Right.
So, issue one. Issue two, Stark Industries should be going after everyone who was involved with a fire axe, and just, you know, whether it's,
and publicly to let it know this was all a con. They took our all of our tech to do this. Here's how they did it. Ooh, that is a good point that we didn't bring up before. Another reason why Stark needs to make this a big public lawsuit.
Exactly. Now, Grant, only like a week had gone by, but still, you can't let something that big happen and not put out press releases, and as opposed to like, oh, we'll just go to cover-up mode. That doesn't work. And you just can't go like, well, he's dead, it's not a problem anymore. It's like, he had a team. Mm-hmm. Like, what the hell do you mean, like, you're not going to do anything? So S.H.I.E.L.D. and Stark Industries can help clear this mess up, but requires them to actually get ahead of this and not leave the high school student to suffer, because that's just messed up. So they need to be involved in that from the, you know, in correcting it, because they can, and they have the ability and the resources to. On the flip side, this raises wonderful evidentiary issues. And like, if you're presented video that's, you don't get to see faces, it's, you know, it's clearly edited, this is like, you would have a tough time authenticating that in court.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wouldn't be admissible. which is why like just showing that to the public is also problematic, and why we have courts and the rules of evidence on how we handle this sort of thing. Then we get into the fun issue of Spider-Man, who's a public figure, who has helped save the world, who's done good things, being accused of a crime, mm-hmm. and then trying to out Peter as a vigilante. That's mm-hmm. that's also, so, I mean, do you want to talk about like the public figure aspect of accusing a public figure of a crime?
Well, I know for defamation, I don't know for a crime, but usually that you, there is a different standard for, yes, basically anything that impugns a character of an individual that's false can be defamation, and it can be libel or slander. Slander is spoken, libel is written, although a lot of times now it's just under a general defamation kind of claim that can be brought together. But anyway, but it's a publication of a falsehood to a third person. But what it happens is if it's a private individual, you don't have to show that you were intentionally and maliciously perpetuating a falsehood. So basically, you know, I don't know, let's say Josh and I are still private individuals, although as legal geeks, we are pretty public figures. If somebody were to say something about us, for example, that we committed a crime, if we were still private figures, we could just go after that person and say, that's not true. Here's the evidence that it's not true. And they told other people about this and it hurt us in this way, and we could show the damages. With a public figure, you generally in the US, and this is actually one of the differences between the US and other nations, you generally have to show that it was done intentionally, and I believe with a malicious intent too, that so you were intentionally trying to hurt them by spreading this falsehood about them, which obviously makes it very hard for public figures in the U.S. to bring defamation lawsuits. They've talked about that. That's why tabloids in the U.K., for example, even as awful as they are and racist as they are, like with Meghan Markle, it is actually a little bit easier to file suits against them for defamation than it is here in the U.S. because you don't have that requirement of showing that they did this for a malicious purpose, some purpose to try to hurt me. In this case, I don't know. I don't know if he'd be able to show, I don't know what the motivations were, if they could show that this is some sort of malicious intent here. I guess that'd be one of the things that's being teed up for the next movie.
Yeah. There are, I think, are two ways to look at it. Spider-Man is a public figure, and going after him, saying, and again, this is the first element in California for slander, which, if it was written, would be libel per quo, was charges any person with a crime or having been indicted, convicted, or punished with a crime. Well, you know, accusing him of trying to murder all of London, that's a crime. You know, yeah. Terrorism, that's bad. Saying that Peter Parker is Spider-Man and thus Peter was the one who tried to murder people in London. Peter's a private individual and his identity is still secret. So that doesn't need actual malice. Being able to say, hey, that wasn't me. I think Peter would have a really good case to go after the Daily Bugle. But where it gets weird is, you know, if Discovery opens up and the secret identity comes out, like that's problematic.
I think that is because that's, I mean, defamation, truth is always basically an absolute defense to defamation. So if they're attacking Spider-Man with these falsehoods, but then saying, oh, by the way, Spider-Man is Peter Parker, and that part is true, I don't think a public figure can claim the protections under the law of a private individual by having, I would argue that you don't get to do that by having a secret identity, right? You don't get to go out and do things publicly and then say, no, you can't treat me as a public figure because I've been doing all that as a masked, you know, hero kind of thing. So.
Yeah. But accusing, you know, on the flip side, accusing Peter of being the vigilante, again, that's, you know, you have a solid argument that might carry the day. You know, what I just articulated would be a more high risk argument to go do.
Yeah. You'd have to make it if you were Peter's attorneys. But yeah, it is, that would be a question of law. I don't know if we've had that. I don't know that there'd be any case where, yeah, we've had people with secret identities doing things publicly.
Yeah, and like stuff like that came up in, you know, a run in Daredevil, where like Matt Murdock was, you know, exposed as being Daredevil, and he denied it and had another person running around acting as Daredevil. Also in, you know, one of the runs on the Spider-Man comics, you know, Peter, you know, as the CEO of Parker Industries, so kind of like a rival to Stark, had another hero running around to Spider-Man, so that way they could be seen at the same place at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, there could be ways to pursue it, but you know, the other big one is, instead of doing the high risk strategy, go out and just out Mysterio and just go to war that way.
Yeah.
Of first off, not true. This is what happened. And the fact that, you know, you're perpetuating this lie, you know, could put it into the actual malice category, which is what a public figure would need to prove. So there's
really, in some ways, this is more of a crisis communication kind of battle than a legal battle, right? I mean, this is where you hire that woman from Scandal who responds instantly. You get, you know, an exclusive with Robin Roberts on GMA or something as Peter Parker, and you explain everything to a sympathetic reporter or so.
That and Pepper Potts spending years of her life cleaning up after Tony should be a good crisis manager who could kick into whoop-ass mode, because in that 8 months, did Peter become Uncle Peter? You know, because you know, like, what kind of relationship does he have with Stark's daughter, who would, you know, like, he might feel kind of like this, like a little sister, you know, type relation.
Yeah.
What kind of, does Pepper think of Peter as kind of a, you know, a son type figure? So she'd put her hair in a ponytail and break a beer bottle and get ready to go cut someone. because she could. Like, Happy wouldn't take this lying down. Happy would, you know, start mobilizing Stark resources to go, oh, hell no, and go to whoop-ass mode.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Peter and Spider-Man can get out of this if the writers go that road. If they don't, I think that's kind of lazy and would suck. But, you know, Peter clearly has, you know, the friends and resources, and Spider-Man has the reputation of being a hero. You know, there was the footage that didn't make it into the movie. You know, that was just to tease us for the previews of, like, him, like, teasing the, you know, the New York PD. So, like, hey, doing it, and, like, and the New York PD loving him. So, you would really have to, you know, people would really have to abandon him fast. And I don't know if they would betray a hero after the events of Endgame that easily. So we'll see where they go with it, but that's just...
Yeah. But you're right, that was big. I forgot about that already, but that was big.
Yeah, well, we won't say the time zone, but it's later for you, and you've been working hard, so that's okay.
Yes, it's been a long Monday.
Well, that, and now we should give credit to MJ for when she's swinging around with Spider-Man, she doesn't throw up or lose bladder control. God bless her, because that would be very easy to do after.
Yes.
I appreciated the fact that she figured out Peter was Spider-Man.
Yeah, I love MJ. I love Zendaya, so I'm biased. So that was half the reason why my daughter loves these Spider-Man movies, is because of her and me too. So yeah, she's pretty awesome. And the whole cast was very good. It was a very good time. Like I said, my daughter saw it basically, you know, twice in 1 week and loved it both times. So
I need to go see it a second time. You know, that crazy Comic-Con prep kind of...
I know.
We haven't done any blog posts yet on this one because we had to get ready for Comic-Con, and two of the three panels are now posted on our podcast channel or on our YouTube channel. The Marvel panel was at the Comic-Con Museum, and they'll send us video to that.
Great.
Yeah, that we'll get video for that when it's ready, and we'll definitely post that. But you can hear our Godzilla and Clone Wars right now.
Excellent. I will have to check those out, and I look forward to hearing more about your adventures at Comic-Con, since work got in the way of me attending this year. And then at some point here soon, we will have to discuss, we'll have to have another short podcast just about all the Marvel reveals for, I guess, round 4 of the Marvel Universe, and there's some very exciting news in there. But I will save that. We'll have to have a separate discussion about that, and you can explain some of these. Some of the stories I know well, others I don't know at all. So
yeah, some of the deep cuts, like who are the Eternals?
It's exactly.
Cool. It's been 30 years since I've read them, so it's cool.
All right.
Yeah, and Comic-Con wasn't the same without you. So
thank you.
Well, listen, everyone, tune in, write a review. If you feel like doing some free reading, highly recommend check out the book that I helped write. So it was fun to write a story about an app that allows people to exchange text messages with dead people. With that, everyone, stay geeky, America.